Saturday, May 27th, 1972. Talking with Mr. J. Wilmer Cronin of Aberdeen, Maryland.
Earliest recollection I have of the Harford County Public Schools is attending first grade at Abington, which at that time was celebrated for Cokesbury College and the nearby Bush Declaration of Independence. Then the second year of schooling started in the old Aberdeen Elementary School, which was located about where the present Aberdeen Senior High School,
Aberdeen Elementary School, on
Route 40.
Why did you switch after 1 year at Abingdon?
Well, the reason I went at Abingdon because our farm was some 3 miles from school, and I had an aunt and uncle who lived then at Abingdon, close by the Abingdon School. So my parents decided that I would start school there until the following year, second year in school. This original school at that time was a frame building, and some years later was torn down in the present brick three-story building that was built. You can remember early in Aberdeen School that a nearby graveyard, Methodist church, was being moved so that the brick building could be constructed while the frame building was still there. And some of our lunchtime activities were watching the workmen dig up the bones of buried people.
Oh,
to be moved to another graveyard.
Well, that must have been fun.
In those days, we didn't have school grounds already prepared for us with ball diamonds across the what is now Route 40 was a vacant land, so we had to clean it off and build our own baseball field.
You kids did the actual work.
Yeah, we put in the work. And I don't know that, I can't remember much help from adults, perhaps a few. Adults helped us get it in final, reasonable shape to play baseball on.
Was this part of the school program or just for after school hours?
Well, no, it was after school hours and during the lunch hour. Of course, the teachers encouraged us to do it, because there wasn't a large enough playground for little children, also for larger children to play baseball. One of the outstanding experiences in the last 2 years of high school was having Mr. C. Milton Wright as principal. In 10th grade, there were two of us. And before the 10th grade ended, there was only one of us left in this grade, so that Mr. Wright and his only pupil covered a lot of extra curriculum that was not then proposed by for high schools.
Like what?
Well, like going to read a lot of Latin, that Virgil and Aeneid, going further with German than was usual. So that as a consequence, when I graduated as the only member of the graduating class, I was able to secure a scholarship to Charlotte Hall Military School in Southern Maryland. And because we had covered history and Latin, but not algebra, the principal at Charlotte Hall permitted me to enter the last grade of the school, which had not occurred prior to that time, that a high school student could graduate from Charlotte Hall in 1 year. So I always felt like I owed Mr. Wright a debt of gratitude for saving at least 1 year of school.
Oh, you must have been an apt pupil.
Well, whether it's apt or not, we had a good teacher.
Yeah.
He's, incidentally, Mrs. Wright, who was then a teacher in mathematics, was one of the best in Harford County. And she aided me enough in mathematics so that I skipped geometry in Charlotte Hall, but was able to get by and graduate with the class in 1 year. After that, it was interesting to attend the University of Maryland Law School and be employed in local brokerage office. And later in the First National Bank of Aberdeen, which is now the Equitable Trust Company following the merger of several years ago. Then we became interested in the newspaper with a friend, W. Earl Jacobs. So we acquired the old Aberdeen Enterprise, which was operated and edited for a number of years by the late George W. Brock, whose son at one time was secretary to Governor Ritchie. Then a little later, we purchased the Harper Democrat in Bel Air from the late Joseph M. Street and his son, and combined the two.
That was in 1919,
I believe. 1919, that is right. That was the year that I was able to pass the bar and become a full-fledged lawyer in Harford County. A little later, 1927, we had always been interested in politics because of the interest that some of the Democratic leaders of that day were taking in young people. I can remember so well of James J. Archer, who was then state senator, member of a family which had been so prominent in Harford County from early days. And Thomas H. Robinson, who became Attorney General of the state, and his deputy, Robert H. Archer, Jr., and late Stevenson A. Williams, who was one time a Republican candidate for governor. Had he been a Democrat, he probably would have been elected because he was a very fine attorney.
And, did you go in and work as assistants, clerks to them, or how did you?
No, the way it worked was in the brokerage office at first, then in the bank, and then after we passed the bar, these attorneys and others were always willing to help young lawyers, so what we didn't learn in school, which was a lot, we picked up by contact with them and experience. And the experience that they had in the practice of law. The late Stevenson A. Williams was the grandfather of our present judge, Albert P. Close. The newspaper continued to grow when I was in the House of Delegates in 1927-29. It was perhaps an 8 or 12 page paper, which didn't require too large a staff. But as the years have passed, the staff has been increased and the pages have been greatly increased.
Mm-hmm. Who were the staff then? Remember all their names?
We had a linotype operator who was a deaf mute. He'd been taught at the School for the Deaf in Frederick how to operate a linotype. And while he couldn't hear, I could always notice that when a squeak occurred, or which needed a shot of oil, the vibration was apparently picked up through his fingers, mm-hmm. and he knew where to remove the squeak. Mm-hmm. He was able to teach me even to operate linotype, which we used at times to directly type news and editorials.
Well, what made you get started in newspapering? This wasn't in your blood, was it?
No, I guess when I was a kid, I decided, observing John D. Worthington, who was both an editor and an attorney, and the late John A. Robinson, who was also an editor and an attorney, as was Mr. Joseph M. Street, that this seemed to be the smart thing to do, practice law and operate a newspaper. But I also saw some people becoming rich because they were engaged in the canning business, so I thought I should have something to do with that. The reason I was in the canned goods brokerage office as the first job which I held.
I believe you said you learned not to stick to that.
That's right. That didn't prove to be as profitable by the time that I was learning the business, because the whole grain shoe peg corn, which was being packed in Harford County prior to that time, was power had been a monopoly, so that the canners, no matter how inefficient they were operating, they could all earn and make money. But they started growing shoe peg corn in other areas and canning it, so this was not as profitable as it had been in years before while I was attending school.
So you sold your part?
So I was promoted, let's say, or changed from that job in the brokerage office of the late William E. Silver, and entered the employee of First National Bank of Aberdeen, which was then operated by several well-known citizens such as John M. Michael, who later became president of the bank, William B. Baker, who was the only congressman probably in the history of Harford County, and members of the Baker family, as well as the Mitchell family, constituted the board of directors.
Was this Mr. Baker any connection to the Baker who was with the Eaches, the early Eaches?
No, that was a different family. Oh. The Baker, Bakers, when the three brothers, when they were very young, started to can tomatoes and corn by processing them on their kitchen stove. The business then grew rapidly, and they spent their energies in canning corn and other people in the area started canning tomatoes.
Mm. What happened to the cannery that's not big business up here anymore? Why is that?
Well, it's because there have been so many canning operations started, particularly in the Middle West, and later in the Far West, where they were able, apparently, to can the products cheap or cheaper than they could do here. While it used to be a canning house, either tomatoes or corn, mostly tomatoes, throughout the county at most crossroads. Now there are very few remaining. The largest canning house now is one of the first, which started a continuous production or canning of corn, and that is located at Paramount. It was operated by the late F. O'Neill Mitchell and Parker Mitchell, and now being operated by the son and grandson of the late Parker Mitchell. Much of their land is recently purchased by the Gas and Electric Company for the nuclear power plant, which will be built, so that their operation will be curtailed somewhat when that plant gets started.
But the other businesses you've been involved in are still thriving, aren't they?
Yeah, yes. The principal business in Harford County now is, as far as payroll income is concerned, are the government plants at Proving Ground, Edgewood Arsenal, Bainbridge. We can remember in 1917 and 1918 when work was started at the Proving Ground, when we were then employed at the First National Bank of Aberdeen and attending night school at the University of Maryland. That business boomed rapidly as farmers were employed with their 2, 4, 6, or 8 horse or mule teams to clear off the area so that the original buildings and gun emplacements and other defense and war material could be moved in and testing could be started. It used to be that dollar bills were most of the currency you would see, but after this operation started, it was not unusual to see a farmer with a handful of 20, 50, and perhaps even $100 bills, which he was earning by using his farm team.
Not giving up his farming, just
no,
adding to it.
No, most of this work was done in the winter, and it was a terrible winter when the mud had to be moved more than anything else. So the farmer, well, there wasn't much he could do at home on the farm, so that apparently there were plenty of teams available for what is now the Arundel Corporation, which had the principal contract in preparing the Proving Ground area for its purpose.
Did you have any involvement there?
No, the bank had to grow overnight from a few million deposits to handling more than $1 million in payroll a week, so that it was a matter, those of us who had the experience and the difficulty in obtaining experienced help, so that we had to work frequently overtime to keep up with the demands made by the sudden influx of civilians and army personnel.
Now, this was just a slightly prior to the time when you became a journalist.
Yeah, we started in in 1919, and found that it was much harder work than we had believed, but it still was fascinating and has continued. There have been many changes in the method of operation.
Oh, boy.
The type used to, much type used to be set by hand, and of course most of it by the use of linotypes, but even now they've become somewhat outmoded, although we still have two in use. With the new electronic equipment, which is produced from overgrown IBM electric typewriters, or
was it something like a Just a Writer?
Yeah, Just a Writer, and teletype setters and Freedons. Some of the new equipment, even more wonderful equipment, is to come. For instance, now we can set type on a machine somewhat like a typewriter. The operator can keep typing continuously, and that tape is fed through a machine which breaks down the words which have been written into lines properly spaced, and if the operator was punctuating properly, it would be properly punctuated, and so the time for preparing a column of type is being reduced from possibly an hour to 15 minutes or less.
Is this the, it comes out on the punch tape and then it's put through,
yeah. Yeah, the tape feeds through this electronic machine.
What's the name of your machine?
The, well, all of it that we're using now is IBM equipment.
Mm-hmm.
There's other new machines now on the market. One of them that they anticipate shortly will permit you to dictate into the machine and it will type the words properly.
Every that, line justified? And
yeah, all the lines justified.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's still for the future.
That brings up something. The time has lessened for setting type, but the pay for doing that has gone up considerably in these years.
Oh, yes. Yes. Girls now, who not too many years ago were probably receiving 75 cents an hour, are now starting at $2.25 an hour.
And what did you used to pay an old linotype operator?
Well, back in 1919 or 1920, I presume we were paying around $25-$30 a week. And now that
was pretty good then, though.
Like, yeah, that was
and at that
better
time,
than average.
Generally, from what I've been able to find out, the shop people were often paid more than the editorial people, I mean, the reporters,
yeah,
and so forth.
Yeah, that.
Does that still hold true, or is it?
It's about even, I presume, now in the business. That the reporters and those who work in the shop are probably getting about the same amount of money now.
You don't have to set too much type yourself these days, do you?
Oh, no, no. But, very little anymore. In fact, none, except for an occasional line sometime late in the evening.
But you still write.
Yes, we still write. And usually now I dictate on a recording machine rather than writing it longhand or typing on typewriter.
You can do that without revision, just map it out?
Yeah, we have a chance, or someone else has a chance, of course, to read it after it's been typed from the recording machine.
Do you like this new method of gathering and printing the news?
Well, I guess we do. It's not as not quite as intimate a relation between the editor and reporters and staff with the general public, because in 1919 and 10 or 15 years thereafter, possibly, we knew 95% of the people with whom we came in contact. Now, with the influx of new residents in the county, and perhaps because a younger generation is coming along, there are many stories that necessarily are written about people who we had never met. So that is probably one of the greatest changes.
Does that make for more objectivity, maybe?
It may do. It may well do.
Does it make for more libel suits, maybe?
Perhaps. Of course, those recent decisions of the courts, particularly Supreme Court, have almost eliminated libel suits as far as being a productive activity for those who feel that their sensibilities have been injured or they have been damaged.
Well, this does bring up the idea of privacy, though, doesn't it? How do you decide what news is fit to print?
Well, perhaps we're old-fashioned. News that we hear at times and see recorded, let's say, in the dailies, some of it we don't feel needs to be printed, and that probably the readers are better off if they do not read it. I guess we're all getting away from this, though, that the country newspapers are being forced to imitate to some degree the latitude which the dailies use in publishing news. But we try to keep it objective and not to injure persons when there's nothing to be gained by such an injury.
Along those same lines, how do you feel about the newspaper's responsibility in reporting things for people to know, private things of the government and so forth?
Well, I didn't think the so-called Pentagon Papers and some of the records, which, whether properly or not, were marked as private or not to be printed, there certainly are some things which our government has recorded which would be of benefit to the enemy, or to our enemies, which we certainly should not publish for their benefit. The disclosure and printing of confidential material, I don't think helped the public any, and yet perhaps brought a lot of money to the editors.
You serve on some public commissions and so forth, and you're also a newspaper man. I guess you have some hairy situations, don't you, when you could print some things? How do you decide what should be printed and what shouldn't?
Well, the there's probably not much that occurs in Harford County that shouldn't be printed, at least that has any reference to public's business, the government, various commissions. We've always felt that everything that the county commissioners or its commissions, legislature does, people should be made aware. There are sometimes things that would only hurt to have them debated in public. That should be settled by a commission or a group among themselves before.
You mean they should have non-public meetings?
Yeah, but there should be some executive non-public meetings where certain things can be worked out by the group. Some of the ideas that clash be straightened out before it gets to the public, because oftentimes it concerns the filling of an office. And someone may remark, well, there's something about that applicant that is questionable, only to have it checked and find that that was just a rumor and that the charge against the person really was not true. That would have injured him had it been brought out in public, even though it was untrue, because usually the bad things said about people are remembered, but the corrections or the good things said about them are frequently ignored or forgotten.
How do you, as a newspaper man, feel about the treatment of the recent incident in Bel Air over the police chief?
Well, I think that was all right. The public were entitled to know that the board was considering making a change of a police chief, which a chief who had been very popular with the public, and so that when it was learned that he was to be replaced, the public properly had the opportunity of objecting to that, and
took it too.
And it became a very serious matter, and as it turned out, apparently the town is better off and that the officer stays until his usual time of retirement arrives.
Do you think the press handled itself well covering this?
I think so. All the facts apparently were published in the local newspapers as well as the dailies. Show how I don't know what I did.
So that they behaved admirably anyway.
Yeah, I think it was a good story, well reported, and certainly tremendously responded to by the public. I remember when we first in the legislature, in the House, when the late Albert C. Ritchie was governor, that the public of that day was, in those days, was just beginning to realize that they were entitled to learn everything that was going on, whether it was at Annapolis or Washington. And it seems to me through the years there's been a greater demand by the public that they be told of the action of public officials. And the legislature, of course, has been such an important body to Marylanders. Just like in every other state, the legislature produces and passes, adopts so many new laws and which affect people's lives so closely. More recent years, that's being done by Congress to a greater extent than the state legislatures. And perhaps that is wrong. Power should not be taken from the state legislators and lodged in Washington, because it's too far from the people to have it properly observed and properly policed by the public.
And some of the press isn't as responsible as the established press, underground and so forth, and I guess they work within the law, but how do you feel about the way they do it?
Well, it's it's not very fair, the things that they write. For instance, you probably read about the editor at Western Maryland who said he should, what he wrote was, he thought, or the court said, was in contempt of the court, so he started serving going to jail before even the judge had sent him there. And when he got out of jail, then the judge suggested it was time for him to start his sentence. Another judge relieved him of the second imprisonment.
He had to pay a fine, too, didn't he?
Yes. But it isn't fair, the things they print, which are not true, and the innuendos that they make against public officials.
So no more trains stop in Aberdeen anymore.
Well, that's right. It used to be that we had Royal Blue and other B&O expresses stop here regularly, and similarly with the Pennsylvania Railroad. As you know, a few years ago, the B&O discontinued its passenger service through Aberdeen, which had continued so long. And now, 2 weeks ago, the Pennsylvania Railroad, which had been stopping trains here regularly, sometimes as many as 8 or 10 a day, took off its last passenger train, so that the Lower Hartford's transportation facilities, which depended on two railroads and two main public highways, is now reduced to the public highways. And the addition of more buses. Of course, Harford County is going to be greatly concerned, along with the with other counties closer to Baltimore, with the proposed rapid transit system, which we hope apparently someday will not require us all to pile into our automobiles and enter Baltimore downtown, but to reach it from out in the country someplace.
Is there any planning started out here?
No, none in Harford County. Of course, the State Roads Commission, as a part of this transportation program, which is being financed now, or will be starting next month, by a 2-cent increase in the gasoline tax, have proposed the Pering Highway to come out from the Beltway to and beyond Bel Air, continue on through the county with a new bridge across the Susquehanna below the Conowingo Dam, which will provide a high-speed, probably non-access highway. And the proposals now being considered by the regional transportation group would have high-speed buses moving over the highways.
This means that people won't be stopping in Harford County, they'll just be bypassing it all the time?
Well, there'll still be a lot of automobile use, but as you get close to Baltimore and other larger cities, the idea is to bring the people together into one vehicle, and so keep the streets a little free for pedestrians and buses.
There's another sound for posterity. The trains have caused some serious injury up here, haven't they? There's been a number of deaths.
Yes, not near as many as the automobile. The trains, most of their accidents have been at railroad crossings where public highways meet the railroad tracks. A number of them have been eliminated, and there are some 3 or 4 left, which the government is trying to cooperate with the railroad company and local officials to have these closed, particularly for the Metroliner because it moves so fast. But you remember that the old Maryland, Pennsylvania Railroad used to run into Bel Air from Baltimore. They called it the Ma and Pa Road, which was closed several years ago.
And there was a time when the railroad station was maybe the busiest spot in town.
Yes, that is true.
Okay, Mr. Cronin, you have been active in the government locally too, haven't you?
Yeah, well, after I served 4 years in the House of Delegates, shortly thereafter I became counsel to the county commissioners. At that time, a 5-member board, which later changed after a highway department was established while I was in the state senate during an 8-year term. We then had 3 commissioners, and for some 20 years or more, I was counsel to the different boards of county commissioners. I also was interested in town government of Aberdeen and served some 20 more or more years as a member of the commissioners, and at least one term as president of the board. More recently, we've represented the Liquor Control Board, which provided for the liquor stores in Harford County, which we passed while I was in the Senate, the authority for the county commissioners to name such a board. And I was counsel of that board for a number of years. And more recently, I've served as counsel to the County Planning and Zoning Commission, and I'm now serving a second term as a member of the Metropolitan Commission, which regulates and provides for the extension of water and sewer facilities.
Now, if the charter passes, then that will no longer be, right?
Yeah, the charter provides that instead of a Metropolitan Commission, there will be an advisory board, which we presume will be somewhat the same in personnel, but will not have the control of the operation, which will then be shifted to the Highway Department and presumably under the control of the County Executive and County Council if the charter form of government is adopted.
What chances do you think it has, either way?
Well, apparently, the indications now are that it will be passed by perhaps a rather narrow margin, as there are a number of older residents who don't believe the change is in the best interest of the county, as they observe the troubles that some charter governed counties, our neighbors, are experiencing.
Why is that, sir?
Well, at the present time, and for ever since the county was started, it has been that the business has been administered by a board of county commissioners, either 5 or 3. In addition, the new laws for the county have been proposed and adopted by the delegates from Harford County to the state senate and the House of Delegates. Under the new plan, one man is going to have almost complete control over the these activities, and some people feel that much power should not be given to one man.
An example, I guess, is Baltimore County, isn't it?
That's right, Baltimore and Anne Arundel, Montgomery, and more recently Prince George and, County and Howard County have this system now in this area of the state.
Well, would the existing setup be able to meet all the problems that are proliferating?
Well, the present form of government has been meeting the problems. Problem, or at least the responsibility for proposing new laws or amending old laws, requires a different type of person than does the administering of laws already made, such as the county commissioners now, although they do have much power in adopting ordinances, which is home rule on a number of different problems. They don't have full authority to enact laws such as they would have.
And that's one of the drawbacks, isn't it?
Yeah, whether it's a drawback or not, can be debated. I believe in the last session of the legislature, less than 20 new bills were introduced and less than that passed by the legislature, because the county commissioners already had the power to deal with a number of important things, so that adopting the charter is only adding to their present powers a few of the things that they could not do before.
And that may or may not be good, huh?
Well, it depends on the caliber of office holders, particularly the executive, who will have tremendous power, and being elected for 4 years, he may not be reelected, but he may not have accomplished too much, or he may have done some wrong things during that 4 years.
Mm-hmm. He puts a great investment into being elected, any candidate, right?
Yeah, we're going to have a most unusual election in that persons are going to be candidates for the chief executive and for the city, for the county council, at the same time that the charter is to be voted on, so that if the charter is defeated, they have spent their time and money for naught. If it is passed at the same time, then of course we move more rapidly into that new system of government than we would have had we voted on the charter first and then had people seeking the offices after the charter was adopted.
There's some controversy here because they are already elected officials would have to run to be elected again.
Yeah, that's
at
right.
At their own expenses.
We're really reducing the new law, or the charter reduces the terms of the five county commissioners, so if they wish to continue in the office, they have to run again for both a primary and a general election, when otherwise they would have two more years of in office, so that if the charter is defeated, then they go on to continue their term of office as county commissioners.
What would you estimate would be about what it costs a commissioner to campaign?
Well, that can vary a lot. Some candidates with time will spend, will use their time in visiting their neighbors and voters. And others who don't have the time, who may be busy, will have to spend money on newspaper and radio advertising. So that it varies considerably, as you even in our present form of government, when you look back at some of the statements filed by candidates, at times there have been losing candidates who have spent two or three times what winning candidates have spent. All the money that, well, candidates are expected and supposed to record with the clerk's office all of their expenditures in seeking any office.
A poor man doesn't have much chance of getting elected, does he?
Well, a poor man doesn't have much chance of getting elected to an important office where other people are willing to spend a lot of money. Commissioners, now, some of them probably spent very little money to be elected last time. I'm just thinking of Freddie Bone, for instance, who didn't have any opposition, though. So you can't count that. John O'Neill had no opposition, did he? He did in the general election, not in the primary. But most of them generally have opposition both in the primary and general election.
Mm.
I think the talk that a poor man can't be president is more to, let's say, Congress, Senate, and the presidency.
Mm.
They're the places where it's just ridiculous now, the amount of money. And I don't know why Nixon didn't encourage everybody putting up a dollar and nobody else could spend any more money. There was
opposition to the idea.
Sure. To some people who do have money or can get paid, have money, friends who will put up money for them. They were the ones opposed to it. They thought they would lose the advantage.
Right.
They had money, see, and that maybe poor man would get away.
We might be sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
He'd ask for a raise immediately.
Yeah, that's the reason they opposed it. But I think it's a good Democratic idea.
Well, locally, certainly a lot of the candidates don't have money. Some of the candidates are delegates.
That's right. Well, I don't believe that we could say that many candidates in Harper down at the county level that were elected just because they had more money to spend than other people. I doubt that. I think generally people have tried to select the best person because there's a lot of, you never get away from that, I guess, a lot of, some of it is a popularity contest.
Yeah.
Well, this man, he belongs to our club, we ought to support him, or he did this for me, we ought to support. May not be the best man, but still, it's a popularity contest. Now, they say that TV has changed the type of office holder considerably because the people had a chance to see them and judge just by seeing what they did and said on TV.
How do you feel about that?
Well, we can't say that we shouldn't have had TV, I guess. If we were going to pursue the idea that the poor man must be given the same chance as the rich, then we could pursue the idea that TV must give equal time free to each candidate for office.
Yeah.
And that means government subsidy because they can't afford to give too much free time. So we're back again that the government is going to support TV, so we all might as well put up a dollar and support it in that manner.
Well, the government, in a way, does control TV because of the licensing and so forth.
Yeah, Mr. Agnew commented on that at times. If they didn't behave themselves, in the meeting, he never said it, I don't think, that maybe the government has to step in and use more control. As it is now, I doubt if there's too much control of what they do by... that's controlled by, what do they call it, ICC?
FCC?
FCC, yeah, FCC.
Now, newspapers don't have to be licensed.
No.
You all police yourselves.
To get the low rates for distribution, you have to be okayed by a post office. You know, otherwise you'd have to pay the same as it costs you to mail your friend a newspaper. The newspapers would have to pay that same rate as it is now. When they qualify, then they get a lower rate to mail newspapers. In bulk, we get a bulk rate.
Well, it's not just newspapers.
But you just can't start a newspaper saying, well, let's take, I guess, the Joppatown Journal maybe as an indication. I don't think they can mail because they haven't acquired the privilege of mailing in that they don't meet certain requirements. So all their papers are delivered to a store or someplace where they are sold or maybe delivered house to house by newsboys.
Well,
they don't go through the newsboys.
Hmm. What are the requirements?
I mean, through the post office. Well, you have to have
circulation.
Yeah, you have to have a plant. You have to have a certain percentage of your subscription paid for by subscribers.
So advertising circulars wouldn't be in, with a little bit of news stuffed in, wouldn't be a newspaper?
No, it doesn't qualify that. They have to pay a higher rate. You get a lot of it through your mail, you know, circulars and so on.
But you all are policed through your own press association at some point, aren't
you? Yeah, that's right.
And you've long been connected with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Association.
Yeah, that's right. My son this year is the president of Delaware.
Yeah, we even got a picture of him with the rest of the officers. And you've held office, too, with the association.
I don't think I was ever president of one of the several committees for a number of years.
Does this serve a real need, or is it just a convivial grouping of editors sitting around having fun, or what?
No, I think it provides... it fills a need in that we have a central office now which is staffed so that they keep all the newspapers informed of, let's say this, some new company comes into the area and starts advertising, they may be bogus advertising, you know, what the advertising may not be true, and again, they may not be financially able to pay for what they're running, but we didn't have an office to investigate when they come in the picture. Individual newspapers maybe wouldn't have the means or the time to make the investigation. Mm-hmm. So it keeps out, I think, bad advertising. It is unfair to the public.
Do you have to belong to the association?
No.
But the Harford County papers...
Yeah, they all belong. And I would say 99% of the newspapers. Probably the only newspapers that don't are what they call the underground newspapers. They don't belong. See, the dailies now and the weeklies are all together in one organization.
And then you have seminars or discussion groups or something, too, don't you?
That's right.
Discussion
problems. And then the office keeps track of people who want to... jobs and the wants of newspapers for employment. Mm. We contact them frequently when trying to find somebody to work.
And the association does some good things for the general public, the school kids, the scholastic kids.
Yeah, they aid in these newspaper seminars for school papers. You know, they can become quite a thing now for all the high schools.
Mm.
Even some elementary schools, the Bel Air did for a while. All right.